Thanks. That's, it is a pleasure to be here, and I thank the organizer for letting me talk here. I will be talking about the inelastic two-atom loss rate, and you'll understand pretty soon exactly what that means, and a concept called the contact, which is probably not familiar to most people, but turns out to be an absolutely central aspect of the behavior of atoms when they have large scattering lengths. And finally, the operator product expansion, which is something that also a few people here probably know about. But it's one thing it does is provide rigorous relations between few body physics and many body physics. Even in the case when you have very large scattering lengths where simple concepts simply break down. And this inelastic two-atom loss rate is a very nice illustration of exactly the problem and how this operator product expansion can provide a solution to that problem. So the specific problem I'll be considering is fermionic atoms with two spin states. They'll have a large scattering length, so the scattering length is much greater than the range. When that's the case, these atoms have universal properties that depend only on the scattering length. And the word universal is used in many, used very often. And in this case, it'll mean depends only on the scattering length. And what's important about that is that means that these aspects don't apply only to atoms, but also to hadrons or to nuclei. And one interesting problem I learned recently that where these might be relevant is in the dark matter. Many of the searches for dark matter are actually looking for the inelastic loss rate of dark matter. And so these ideas might be relevant there.
So why did you put universal in quotes?
Well, I will also be using universal. I will also be referring to universal relations involving the contact.
I see.
And these will be universal in a different. They will be universal in the same sense that they depend only on A, but in an additional sense that they depend that they are. They hold for all states of the system, whether it's a few body state or a many body state, or whether it's in a trapping potential or homogeneous or superfluid or normal phase or whatever. It'll
okay.
So they'll be universal will be used in
two. More universal.
It's yes.
I have another question.
Yes.
You say that it's the same, so these calculations also apply to nuclear matter or you say dark matter, or what do you say?
If dark matter has strong interactions at low energy, which some people are taking very seriously in recent years, then one of the things they look for is the loss rate due to annihilation of dark matter. And there are aspects of the dark matter that could depend on a large scattering length.
I'm always confused about this, because these are relativistic matter, doesn't it matter?
The most popular, no one knows what dark matter is. Most popular candidates are very heavy particles that were relativistic at the Big Bang, but became non-relativistic when atoms were formed and are very non-relativistic now. So, yes. So, maybe I should add more. This applies to particles with short-range interactions and non-relativistic particles. But, yeah.
So if you can't see it, how can you detect the loss?
Well, there is some hope that they annihilate into particles we can see. And so people are looking in cosmic rays, looking for extra photons or the annihilation products of dark matter. Okay, things that depend only on scattering length. Well, in the few body case, depending only on the scattering length will require only that the energy be small compared to the scale set by the range, but doesn't have to be small compared to scattering length, the scale set by the scattering length. In the many body case, I'll need temperatures that are small compared to the scale set by the range, but not necessarily compared to the scale set by the scattering length, and number densities that are small compared to the scale set by the range, but again, not compared to the scattering length. So I will demand that things be dilute compared to the scale set by the range, but they can be not dilute compared to the interaction scale, which is set by the scattering length. Okay, so Oh, let me add, so what, let me add one more feature, that what I want is to have an inelastic scattering channel. Which will provide allow atoms to be lost large. So to make this explicit, suppose let me draw the energy levels of hyperfine states against magnetic field, and I might have something like like that. Those could be the hyperfine energy levels of the function magnetic field. And let me consider the case where my particles 1 and 2 are these, and they could have a spin relaxation scattering process where 1, 2 goes to 3, 4. And if you have very cold atoms, that'll be enormous energy release. And so what you'll have is atoms 1 and 2 drifting together. And then there'll be enormous energy release. 3 and 4 will fly out with very high energies. And so it'll, as far as your, well, if they're trapped, they might be able to escape, have enough energy to escape from the trap. They will be lost. As far as, if you're counting low energy atoms, they will be lost from the low energy atoms. And while I'm at it, I might as well draw the scattering length A12, which I would like this to be near, well, I'll have this near a Feshbach resonance. So at this energy, at this magnetic field I'm considering in, I would like to be near this Feshbach resonance, which gives me a large scattering length. Okay, and the problem is, what is the rate at which these atoms are lost? And if you have a very, very dilute system, then there's kind of a very common sense answer. Namely, if I ask what is the rate at which atoms of type 1 are lost, well, all you would do is, you'd take the amplitude for 1, 2 to scatter into 3, 4, and square it, integrate over the, well, sum over the final states, and sum over the initial states, weighted by some appropriate Boltzmann distributions, perhaps. Okay, and that's very common sense physics. But this should be okay in the dilute limit.
Sorry, are you assuming the scattering length is real?
Once you have the inelastic scattering channel, there will be a complex scattering length.
Yeah, the reason I'm asking is because then, you know, that rate is just going to be the imaginary part of the scattering length.
Okay.
And that's all there is,
right?
I mean, with the sum coefficient of that, right?
That's all there is at the most naive level. The dilute limit.
Well, it's the two-body scattering.
Yeah. But suppose I have a many-body system, and suppose I have a large scattering length, so it's not dilute, and these particles 1 and 2, they're continually scattering off of the other species.
But become elastic scattering from 1 and 1 to 2?
No, I'm assuming that once they undergo an inelastic collision, they'll leave the trap.
Yes.
They're moving so fast.
Right.
So you're not going to have subsequent scattering, right?
I won't be worried about final state interactions of these very high energy particles. They'll have tiny cross sections as they fly out.
Yeah. if that's the case, then the two body scattering, I mean, the inelastic scattering is entirely described by the imaginary part of the scattering length.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And then you have the redistribution of particles from 1 to 2 to the elastic. So he's writing the N1 dt, so it cannot be that atoms in N1 elastic transfer to 2. Not the inelastic particle, the elastic.
So you mean
1 and 2 can scatter
elastically. So
scatter elastically.
If they're inelastic, they're lost, but cannot
sure,
1
sure.
and 2 elastic, and therefore there is going to be a transfer from 1 to 2.
No, a transfer from, I mean, 1 and 2 are conserved, well, 1 and one minus two is conserved.
But this expression assumes that you have well-defined particles. It's just a possible picture. If you go to the strongly excited machine, you don't even have to have well-defined quasi particles.
Yeah. The problem is that these incoming states that are drifting along are no longer well-defined because before they have come very far, they will have scattered against another guy. So, you know, with all these scattering events, this guy will also be scattering off of the other species.
Exactly.
And the problem is defining what do you even mean by this amplitude for 1, 2, to 3, 4 in the many-body system where particles are scattering all the time?
Elastic.
You know, they're elastically scattering all the time and sometimes scattering inelastically and disappearing.
So in the minus demonstration, you
yes.
Sorry, you mentioned dark matter. Sorry for interruption.
Mm-hmm.
it's okay. For example, dark matter has weak interaction. It cannot have electricity.
Dark matter has weak interaction in the early universe.
I know what is dark matter.
Right, no, in the early universe.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are indications
now,
that
nowadays,
dark matter is not weakly interacting at present low energies.
There is no choice. It may be only weakly interacting.
That's
for example, neutrino. This is it's rejected, but for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Massive neutrinos. It would be a perfect candidate.
Mm-hmm.
So it does not look. It may be described by scattering length at all.
Right.
I don't understand something.
Right. But there are other dark matter candidates that could be described by us. Their behavior nowadays could in present era could be described by a scattering length.
Well, for example, any candidate of dark matter which may be described as scattering length.
Let's talk about that later.
Okay.
I mean,
it's only
interesting
short
question.
Range, weak interaction. There is no choice.
Unless you have something like a Feshbach resonance, or if you have a bound state near threshold, then you can have dramatic energy dependence at low energy.
The short range interaction. Okay, maybe we'll discuss
the traditional candidates, yes. Have
even non-traditional.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Okay.
But so this is okay in the dilute limit. It's just common sense. But you might ask, what if you're not quite in the dilute limit? Can you are there a systematic way to get a better and better approximation? And second, what about in the unitary limit?
But do you mean dilute limits at fixed temperature or something?
By dilute limit, I mean, By dilute limit, what I mean is N A cubed, much less than one. Yeah, so that I'm always considering dilute relative to the range, but in this, if I have dilute relative to the length scale of interactions, then this should certainly be possible. These particles can travel a long ways between interactions, and so you can have well-defined particles that scatter.
I was just meaning that looks pretty classical, and so one might wonder whether one wants the de Broglie wavelength at the temperature at to be shorter than the interparticle spacing or something like that.
I want temperatures small compared to the scale set by the range, and number densities compared to the scale set by the range. So those conditions I will always imagine I have, and I won't keep repeating them.
Sorry, can I just clarify?
Yes.
So you're considering the regime where a three-body processes are still neglecting one of them.
No, no. I mean, three-body will be three-body, four-body, five-body. Everything happens when you have a large scattering length.
So it's going to make it not applicable. So as long as three-body can be neglected them, then you can still use it, right?
But when the scattering length, when the scattering length is large, three body, four body, five body cannot be neglected.
But it's, in other words, to put what you're saying is that if some three body processes are one can be neglected, then you then the three centimeter style will look like.
That's true.
Because I don't quite understand what that picture you drew up there. Well, why do I have to care about the atoms scattering elastically before they undergo an inelastic scattering?
Well,
it's all two body scattering.
He doesn't know the incoming wave function. So let's say the wave function is a one
well, given by distribution,
by,
right?
What?
It's given by distribution. Like if you're in a Maxwell Boltzmann distribution.
No,
right, but this,
know that.
But this, these Maxwell Boltzmann distributions are not even well defined if you have a large scattering length. The expression terms of Maxwell, even the Maxwell Boltzmann distributions, are a dilute limit concept that isn't applicable in the
But again, you know, that only breaks down when you start caring about three body interactions.
Yes, and I care about three body, four body, I
but
care about.
We're talking about fermions, anyway. So these are highly suppressed. You have non identical fermions.
They're highly suppressed if it's very dilute. They're not highly suppressed if it's very dense.
But you've got two spin states anyway, so even if you suppress parallel spin scattering, you don't suppress.
Well, you'll find that there is a high suppression, but you'll find out what the source of that high suppression is. And the answer might be a little bit surprising.
Could I just maybe ask again what I was saying about what one means by dilute?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for example, let's say the scattering length, the elastic scattering length was negative.
Mm-hmm.
And then one maybe has a BCS ground state if it's
dilute. Sure.
Then is this, George was suggesting then you'd think about maybe the Bogdanov quasi-particles obeying this expression.
Perhaps.
Is that what one...
Well, except...
There might also be an issue about the coherent decay, I mean how the condensed particles
but
decay as well.
If I'm in the unitary limit where A is plus or minus infinity, then at that point, in that limit, the interactions are scale invariant. And so the quasi-particles are not sharp. They have a width that's set by the density. Everything, in the case when you have, if interactions set no length scale, the only length scales are set by the system. And so the density sets all length scales, including the quasi-particle energies, the quasi-particle widths. Everything is set by the density. And then what do you do? And this is the question I'm going to try to answer. Okay, so let me first tell you the answer. And unfortunately, the answer, well, one thing was already pointed out is that in this case, you have a complex scattering length because you have this inelastic scattering channel. So there's a negative imaginary part of the scattering length. And so let me do it. And it's going to be an approximation, and in what sense an approximation will become clear later. And the imaginary part of the scattering length will enter. Better yet, the imaginary part of the inverse scattering length. And there'll be some property of the system, which is the contact. And so this is the answer. And what I have to tell you is, what is the contact, and in what sense is this? Yes?
That's in the unitary
limit. No. Whenever you're in the universal regime, mm-hmm. where energies, temperatures, densities are small compared to the scale, set by the range. Okay.
So the bigger, so it's inversely proportional to the measure part of what's that?
Well, maybe I should mention one more thing. There were actually experiments on this. There were experiments related to this problem, and I should have mentioned that these are experiments by Carl Wyman's group at Dijila. These were using rubidium 85 atoms, so the my hyperfine states were different, weren't quite the same as what I drew. And this was 2005. And but these are identical bosons. And I can just mention at the end, what is the complication with identical bosons? But I'll be, for the most part, talking about the simple case, the fermions with two spin states. I guess I forgot what you asked.
I'm just looking at this equation.
Oh.
So I'm trying to understand what you wrote. So this is the measure part of 1 over a?
Yes.
So you're saying that the bigger the scattering length, the smaller the loss?
Well, 1 over a is a more useful variable. It's, you know, it goes through 0 through a Feshbach resonance, not through infinity. And 1 over a is a more useful measure of the inelasticity. Measure part of 1 over a is more useful.
It's like a sinus suppression, but the rate decays exponentially, 1 over the decay rate. So for sino, then the larger the imaginary part, then you suppress losses, something like that. Even if they continue?
Well. Well, this will be a property of the system that is well behaved in any limit. It's well behaved in the unitary limit among others. This contact. It's a property of the system that it doesn't. It depends upon the system. It's different. Well, I'll give you some examples, but let me proceed to tell you what.
Can I ask you this in another way? So we know that in the dilute limit, then the losses are going to be bigger for bigger scattering length. So how does your equation interpolate or go to that limit?
Let me, in a few seconds, I'll just write down the contact for a few simple cases, like dilute BEC limit, BCF limit, and that might help clarify. Then
so C must depend on the scattering length as
well. C depends upon the scattering length, and yes. Yes. So this concept of the contact was introduced by Sheena Tan back in 2005. And it's turned out to be an absolutely central property of systems with large scattering length. So what is it? Well, let me decompose the energy into the kinetic plus interaction plus trapping potential. I'll be needing those. So this is interactions, and this is trapping potential. And so let me, I'll use this to define some of the properties of the contact. So first of all, one of the properties is if I vary the scattering length, the energy varies in a way that's determined by the contact with a simple coefficient. Another basic relation is a virial theorem for harmonic trap. The virial theorem in simple cases tells you that the kinetic energy plus interaction minus the potential energy should be zero. If there are no interactions, or if there are interactions that are scale invariant, this should be zero. In general, the difference is not zero, but it goes to zero as the scattering length goes to infinity, and it's proportional to the contact. Another example is the tail of momentum distribution. Maybe I should move up here. If I normalize my, if I have a momentum distribution, I normalize it in a standard way, so that when I integrate over wave numbers with a 2 pi cubed, I get the total number, then this at large momentum, there will be a tail of a momentum distribution that falls off like a power law, and it falls off simply as a contact over k to the fourth, no matter what state of the system you're looking at. Another example is if you have RF spectroscopy, let's say, which transfers particles of 2 into some other state 3, the clock shift, the frequency shift averaged over the entire system will be proportional to the contact. I am okay. So I hope that's enough examples to convince you that it is a very central property of the system. It's related to the thermodynamics, for example, through this relation. The thermodynamics is largely determined by the contact. Tails of correlation functions are sometimes determined by the contact. Various other examples could be written down involving photo association and structure factors, etc.
Sorry, what is A13
is if I have RF spectroscopy that transfers 2 into 3, 2 into spin at the state 2, the second spin state, into a third spin state, then A13 is the scattering length of one spin state 1 relative to spin state 3, where this is A12. So A is A12, and the clock shift will depend upon final state interactions involving the third particle. Okay, so this, you can take any one of these as a definition of the contact if you like. If you want a more intuitive definition, first of all, it's an extensive quantity. That means the contact is the integral over space of some density. And what this contact density is the number of pairs per volume to the 4/3 power. You'd expect number of particles per volume has a nice well-behaved limit. That's just the number of density particles. You'd expect the number of pairs per volume squared to be well-defined. But when there's a large scattering length, there's the correlations between the particles that guarantee that it's not the number of pairs per volume squared that has a well-behaved limit as you get to smaller and smaller distances. It's the number of pairs per volume to the 4/3. So take a series of balls, smaller and smaller, and count the number of pairs of particles. If you divide by the volume to the 4/3, you'll find it has a well-behaved limit because of the correlations that are forced by this large scattering length. And it'll continue until you get to balls whose size is set by the range, and then everything gets more complicated. So if you want, it's proportional to the limit as the volume of these balls go to 0, N1, N2 over V to the 4/3. Okay.
And in general, it depends on position because of the trap.
Yes.
So the way you're shrinking the balls, not as, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is it D plus 1 over D if D is greater than or equal to 3 or anything? Is that how to think? Is the 4 D plus 1 or is it something else?
Um, two dimensions and four dimensions are special, and in three dimensions you have, in the limit of infinite scattering length, this is described by a scale invariant field theory that's conformally invariant. That theory becomes trivial in two dimensions and in four dimensions, and so it's...
Okay, so it's just by itself somewhere.
You can do an epsilon expansion. You can do epsilon expansions around 2 and around 4 and interpolate between 2 and 4. But if you like integer, if you prefer integer dimensions, you're kind of stuck with 3.
Yeah, sure.
You mean that C is not property of a pair?
C is a property of the system. So if you have...
So it's not property of a single pair?
No. It's a, no.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so let me give a couple... A few examples to at least give you some idea what this contact is. So it's number of pairs per volume to the 4/3. So it should, well, the contact density is 1/4 length. When I integrate, I'll get 1/4 length. So you should expect contact is 1/4 some appropriate length. If I have this dimer of 1 and 2. In the case where A is greater than 0, the contact is simply 8 pi over A. So this is, I have particles 1 and 2 that are very loosely bound by this very large scattering length. The contact is simply 8 pi over A. If I have a homogeneous balanced gas, I can consider three cases. One, I'll introduce the Fermi wave number, 3 pi squared n, say n1, well, n sigma to the 1/3. Okay. If I have the BCS limit, which is KFA, well, it's A negative and KFA much less than 1. There's a unitary limit, KFA is infinite, well, much greater than 1. And then the BEC limit. Well, the BEC limit is simple because in this BEC limit, what you have is a Bose-Einstein condensate of these dimers. And so the answer will just be the contact per dimer times the number density of dimers. So in this case, the contact density is 8 pi over A. And the number density of dimers is n. I guess it's just n1. So the other limits. In this case, the contact density is what you guess from kind of what you might guess from weak interactions. There's interaction, there's a cross section times the number density squared. Let me just make this the total number densities. This is n over 2. And then here, it's in the unitary limit. It's also perfectly well defined. It's 0.1, some universal constant with more digits, and key Fermi to the 4th. Okay, so there, if I have a homogeneous gas with infinitely large scattering lengths, this will be an approximation to the rate at which the number of particles are lost.
Does this is? Oh, go ahead.
This 0.1 is what, from Monte Carlo or measurement?
From Monte Carlo, and so I didn't give you the second digit or the error bar, but determined from Monte Carlo calculations is one way to do it.
And you said that it doesn't anything to do with the pair. I'm confused about that because the way I understand, I saw the contact first introduced was, I think that's the way you did it also, Shinzan.
function. So what's the short range behavior of a pair correlation function?
So if I have the number density of particles, if I have number, if I have the pair correlation function. Well, is this the pair correlation function?
Yeah.
Okay. So if I have the pair correlation function, this at short distances approaches 1 over 16 pi squared times the contact density at position. So it's another aspect that shows you the important property of the system that's determined by the contact density.
But isn't it just the 1 over r part of the relative wave function where the two particles come close to you?
What I would say that all of these properties are determined by two-body physics. That is, the coefficients are determined by two-body physics. But many-body physics enters into the contact.
Yes.
The contact is, you know, depends upon the state, but it depends upon the state in such a way that all these things are correlated.
So it gives the boundary for the pair wave function when they get far apart. So,
well, in the sense that the number density goes like, as a function of momentum, the tail of the momentum distribution goes like 1 over k to the fourth. So it tells you the tail of the momentum distribution.
So sorry, the limit that you're writing there is for very small or very large?
Sorry, very large, very, very small separation. Ooh, in fact, I forgot the crucial one over r squared. So correlations between number densities get very large at small distances, and that's related to why it's the pairs per volume to the 4/3 that is a well-behaved limit. Okay, let's see. Okay, I'm gonna probably have to make a leap of sorts. Okay, let me make a kind of a large jump I'll have to make a few large leaps in order to get to this in a short time, but okay. All right. Number one. Okay. First, this is the operator that counts the number of particles of type one. So it's the expectation value of this operator that is a thing that I'm asking how it changes in time. And so the expectation value of this operator will involve in any particular state x, psi one, dagger, if you'll excuse the field theory formulation with field operators. Okay, so this is the expectation value in some state, and the time dependence of this state is simply determined by a Hamiltonian acting on, let's say, the initial state. But I'm asking how it varies in time, and I just simply have to differentiate with respect to the time here, 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 and here. And I'll just write down the answer of that derivative and hope that you'll regard it as plausible. Okay. So I guess I should add something, that if I have a complex scattering length, the Hamiltonian is not Hermitian because of that. Oops. So I have to keep the difference between H and H dagger, because a complex scattering length comes from a non-Hermitian Hamiltonian. But anyway, if I ask what is the rate of change of number of particles in state one, it'll be determined by something involving psi dagger psi, and also by the Hamiltonian. And this Hamiltonian has the Hamiltonian density involves a kinetic term, and an interaction term, and a trapping term. And the term that's going to matter the most is this interaction term, which will involve something that this operator that counts the number of pairs. This gives interactions where two particles of type 1 and 2 can scatter at a point. And so let me jump to the answer, jump a step that I hope you'll see is plausible. So H dagger psi one minus psi one H. Okay, so that just comes from differentiating the H. It pulls down a factor of the Hamiltonian, and you have to worry about the denominator as well. And what that does is simply subtract off something like that. So I hope you'll take this as at least plausible. And then I have to worry about the kinetic term. But turns out that just gives you the commutator of the kinetic term with a number density as a current. It'll give you the divergence of a current, and when you integrate over space, that'll go away. So this won't matter. The trapping potential involves the density, which commutes with the density, so that'll go away. The only thing that won't go away is this term. And so let me make another leap. So M integral dvr integral dvr prime and 1, 2, dagger, 1, skip one point, at another point, minus this is just subtracting the connected part of the correlator. So it's really the connected part of the correlator of the interaction energy with the number density. And now you're at a point where you can see that it involves double integral space of an operator product of two operators. And moreover, this subtraction term guarantees that as you take these points farther and farther apart, it'll go to zero. So it's at least plausible that, the fact that your subtraction guarantees that the difference goes to zero at large separation, makes sense to try to expand in the separation of those two operators. And that's where the operator
product expansion comes in.
Yes. The expectation value is still respect to x and t, right? It's still time dependent.
Expectation, say that again?
The bracket, it's just expectation value, right?
It's really the, yes, expectation value. So the, it's the, yes, it's exactly this kind of thing, the matrix element divided by the normalizing factor.
So it's still time dependent.
It's, if you want, if your system is time dependent, then this is time dependent. At any instant, the loss rate will be given by this integrated correlator. Okay, well, I'm going to make another leap. If I worked out, if I went through the details, you'd find that this coefficient, the difference of those two bare coupling constants, in fact, brings in the imaginary part of 1 over A, and that's where that came from. And this, combined with that, is in fact the contact density operator. So, derivative respect to N1, when all that settles, I have minus 1 over 4 pi m integral. I'll change variables to a relative momentum, I'm sorry, relative position and average position. And what I'll get is the contact density operator times the number density operator minus the minus the subtraction. And what I need is, well, if I expand this in powers of R.
So your second line is the two.
Sorry. Yes, thank you. Yeah. Okay. And I would like to expand that in powers of R. And this is the operator product expansion that was invented back in 69 by Ken Wilson and Alexander Polyakov, and by Leo Kadanoff, coming from three different directions. But Wilson suggested that if you expand in powers of R, there should be an asymptotic expansion in the separation. In relativistic field theories, it's been shown in the last year or so that in fact it's a convert in the case of relativistic field theories, and this is a non-relativistic field theories, so you have to ask whether it's still valid. But for relativistic field theories, this expansion powers of R is a convergent expansion, which is surprising. And second, it's an expansion that is exponentially convergent at any fixed separation. And so, well.
It's quite surprising it's analytic.
What's that?
It's quite surprising it's analytic at small separations.
It's not analytic because it involves...
I'm sorry, I was assuming convergent meant that it's not asymptotic.
Yes, right. It's surprising. And it's been proven for relativistic field theories. So the Lorentz group is not the same as the Galilean group, but...
All the commutators of delta functions and things and so...
Well, it's not... It's okay, so let me write down the next step. When you expand, you're going to find the leading term will be a delta function times the contact density at the average position. And I forgot the imaginary part of 1 over 8 here. And then there'll be infinitely many higher order terms that involve operators, more complicated operators than this contact density. And the claim is that this sum at any fixed separation is exponentially convergent. So this will give the leading term. This is minus 1 over 4 pi m imaginary part of 1 over a, and the times the contact. These functions are functions of only the separation. This is an operator. This expansion is an operator relation. So these are functions that depend only on a and r. And you can calculate them using few body physics. So the only way the many place many body state enters is through the expectation values of operators. When you boil this down, you'll find that these integrals over separation of f's will be some scattering length raised to a power, delta n minus 4. And then you have these integrals over space of local operators, expectation values of local operators. Now, in the unitary limit, this will simply be K Fermi to the scaling dimension of the operator. And so this is an expansion that as A gets large, this and higher terms have higher scaling dimensions. These successive terms have not suppression factors, but enhancement factors, powers of A. But the fact that it's exponentially convergent guarantees that the sum, there'll be numerical suppression factors that guarantee the validity in the large scattering length limit. So the claim, is that if you believe that the properties of the operator product expansion relativistic field theories apply also to non-relativistic, this should be a good approximation even in the unitary limit, where every successive term has a larger and larger factor of KFA, but there are exponential suppression factors that make them smaller and smaller anyway.
Is it obvious that C that enters in the first part? I mean, it sounds reasonable, you can expand it in small r. Why is it C that enters? Is that just
it's simply looking at this operator. If you just commute, if you anti-commute this guy through the psi 1, it'll give you a delta function, and it just eliminates, it'll just give you the contact density back again. So it's obvious just from simple commutation relations that the first term is the contact. But, yes?
I hate to do this, but we are nearing the end.
Yeah, so I've gotten to the end, so I can quit here.
So close to the time DC, you said that it's 0.1 kF to the fourth, so it scales like 1 over 8, yes?
It's magic. This is something like 0.1 kF.
To the fourth.
Times the volume. This is for a homogeneous system, so it's times the volume integral.
Yes, exactly. So I mean, the larger the A, you suppress losses. The larger the imaginary part of. The larger the imaginary part of A. So if A is pure imaginary, so no elastic part.
You can have the imaginary part much bigger.
Much bigger, exactly.
You can have the cross section be equal in the velocity.
It is equal scattering. Let's take it from the S matrix. It's 1 minus block phase shift. The off diagonal is if you sign the alpha. It's 1 minus sign alpha. It's sign alpha on the top. The field you have is 1-1. The full matrix, 1-1-1-1. That's the most lossy you can get. You can never take away the elastic.
Well, it doesn't match. So you have A plus IR, so the imaginary, so you have A. So I think it's going to be.
Yeah, you can still, so this is called the tri-state, right? If there's the real part of the imaginary part, another, so it's going to be proportional to the imaginary part divided by A squared, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And if it's dominantly imaginary part,
only by imaginary. Let me just add one more thing, and that is that these scaling dimensions.
Well, that's what I find surprising.
These scaling dimensions, this is something of a dimension, this was the integral of a contact density, which is dimension 4. That's where the k after the fourth is. These higher dimensions, the first one is 8.54. And then there's 9.3 and so on. And so the one reason the unitary limit might be a good approximation for fermions is that this next operator has a high scaling dimension. So my exponential suppression of high dimensions is quite effective. If I have bosons, this is only 5 instead of, I jump from 4 to 5, not from 4 to 8.5. So for bosons, this is all, it's much more, well, you need more terms in the expansion to get a good approximation. But it's at least plausible that the first approximation involving contact is a good approximation for identical fermions.
So I missed something slightly. So the function of little r then became this set of constants.
If I integrate, I have integral over separation.
Yeah, then you get this.
And that changes a function of A into R and to a function of A only. And it'll have simple scaling behavior, just A to a power, nothing more. And the powers are, you can figure out what all the powers are. First one that comes in is 8.45. Okay.
Sorry, the same question about dark matter. So if you talk about
that over lunch, but why don't you go ahead and ask the question. But
quick answer. You mean people who use free particle model are wrong? They calculate dark matter annihilation incorrectly.
What they find is that if dark matter has no interactions and you follow the evolution of the universe, you get very sharp clumps, very sharp cusps of dark matter at the centers of galaxies, and observations tell you that that does not happen. So there must be some mechanism for getting rid of sharp cusps of dark matter at the center of galaxies. And one mechanism is to have large, low-energy cross-sections, which you can get through having a bound state near threshold or...
So your conclusion is it wasn't correct. So we calculate annihilation, it's incorrect.
No, annihilation is fine. Well,
actually, can we move
yes.
To afterwards?
Yes.
Or let's everybody get a coffee before the next speaker is on.
Yes.
Actually, thank you.